This program is part of the Cosmic Potato Podcast Network. For more shows like this, visit our website at cosmicpotato.com.
Fifty years ago, the world was introduced to the phenomenon that was Star Trek. Popular culture was changed forever, and eventually it became 6 television series and 13 motion pictures. People from all walks of life have been affected by it. Their lives have been affected by the lessons and the philosophies that they took away from it. This is the story of those fans. Interviews with individuals who love Star Trek and believe that their lives are better because of it. This is their prime direction. Hey everybody, welcome to the Prime Direction, the Star Trek fandom podcast. I just wanted to take a minute right here at the beginning of the show. I want to let you guys know how much I really do appreciate you downloading and listening to this podcast. It humbles me whenever any person tells me, hey, I listened to the last episode. Just the fact that somebody is listening to me geek out over talking to celebrities and talking to people that I meet at conventions and just other podcasting friends of mine about something that I love like Star Trek. You know, it humbles me a great deal that people actually want to take the time to listen to that. So thank you very much for listening. And I've been able to chat with a few celebrities that I'm really a fan of since I've been doing this. I interviewed Vic Mignogna a few months ago. I talked to Michael Jan Friedman a few months ago, and this episode is no different. My guest was Michelle Specht. She plays Dr. Elise McKenna in Star Trek Continues. If you don't know what that is, it's a web-based fan series based on Star Trek. It's the continuation of the original series, so it's season 4 and 5, and it's a great show. They've got 8 episodes so far. They're all available on YouTube, so you should go and check those out. And the final 3 episodes that they've made are all set to be released later this year. And listen to the episode, listen to the interview, stick around to the end, and Michelle will let you know all the places that you can find her, her Facebook page, her Twitter account, her personal website. This was a great interview. She was a lot of fun to talk to. And Michelle, if you're listening, thank you again for being part of the Prime Direction. So here it is, my interview with Michelle Specht. Enjoy.
From?
I'm in Birmingham, Alabama.
Oh my goodness, how is it down there?
It's hot right now.
Right now, it's freaking hot.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I think the high today is 90, and it's just going to, you know, get hotter. You're in LA, right?
Correct.
What's it like out there right now?
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Sunny, 70 something.
Yeah, see, we get the humidity.
Yeah, I grew up in Colorado, so I am not used to humidity.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I know you do. I know you do. We shoot down in Georgia, and yes, we feel it down there for
sure.
Oh
yeah. Yeah. What part of Georgia do you guys shoot in?
Southern Georgia, just over actually we fly into Jacksonville, Florida, and then drive over.
Oh yeah. That's probably hotter there than it is here.
Yeah, it's hot enough. Obviously we don't shoot in the summer.
Tell me a little bit about where you're from.
Well, my dad was in the Air Force, so we moved around quite a bit when I was younger, but I still consider Colorado my home because I spent most of my childhood there.
Okay. Yeah, my dad was in the Air Force too, and I know what it's like. You swap schools a lot. How old were you when you finally settled down, I guess?
I guess I was 10, so I was there from 5th grade through my high school graduation. We were in Colorado Springs. My dad was working at NORAD, at Space Command.
Oh, wow, okay.
So I went to Air Academy High School, which is on the Air Force Academy, right next to the Air Force Academy. So, you know, a good portion of my adolescence was there.
Did you have brothers, sisters?
I have two sisters, one older, one younger, and one of them and her husband, my younger sister and her husband, and their three kids and my parents still all live in Colorado. So it still really is a home because whenever we get together for holidays, it's easier for me to come from LA, and my older sister works in Washington, D.C. for the Department of Defense. So she comes out from there and she comes out from the East Coast and I come out from the West Coast and we meet in Colorado.
Are you the only one that got into acting?
Oh, yes. Yes, I'm a weirdo. Absolutely the black sheep of the family. None of them are like kind of geeks either. I am definitely the middle child in all senses of that word. I am the only one who got into any kind of performance, and I'm also the only one who is totally into geekdom, trekdom, nerddom, for sure.
Tell me your earliest memory of Star Trek.
My earliest memory of Star Trek. The earliest one I can remember is happening upon original series episodes on television. Mm-hmm. I didn't watch them in any real succession, so I didn't have a real kind of conscious knowledge of the evolution of the show. But I remember the characters, and I remember primarily really identifying with Mr. Spock and really loving Mr. Spock. There was something different about him. I just identified with him and kind of fell in love with him from a very early age. So my earliest memories are really tied to Mr. Spock, honestly. And it wasn't until I started watching Star Trek The Next Generation in my younger years. That was really the first serialized sci-fi show that I watched on a regular basis.
Yeah.
And I absolutely loved it. It's so funny. I've only recently, thank goodness for Netflix, right?
Right.
I've been through Netflix and I've been able to watch Star Trek Next Generation, like from the beginning again, rewatching all of them. And it is astounding to me how that show shaped my character, like truly shaped who I am, shaped how I look at the world, shaped how I look at science, how I look at other cultures, how I look at humanity's role in the world, in what our purpose is. It's astounding to me as I watch them and I remember how intrinsically they formed who I am. And especially, again, even in Next Generation, the character I loved and identified with most was Data. What I love about Star Trek, and I love Gene Roddenberry's vision, the way that he used the other to really shine a light and put a mirror in the front of the face of humanity. I feel like it's the most beautiful way to show humanity as it truly is, and to show us our strengths and our weaknesses most beautifully through the eyes of the other. And I think maybe that's why I loved Mr. Spock so much. And I think it's definitely why I love Data so much, for sure.
Yeah, I think just about every person that I talk to tells me that they connected with Spock the most, or Data. And I think it might have something to do with a lot of Star Trek fans, when they're growing up, they're kind of introverted, and the Spock character and the Data character are the most introverted type characters, and I think that we can we connect with that a little more.
Yeah, I certainly was not an introverted. I'm not. I was not an introvert by any stretch of the imagination, but I definitely was. I was an outsider. I was a weirdo. I was not one of the popular kids by any stretch of the imagination. So I think anyone on the circumference, and I certainly understand why introverted personalities would certainly relate to them. But just as an outsider, someone on the circumference of kind of the cool kids or normal people, I feel like that's why I identified them most.
Do you remember having any Star Trek toys?
No, I didn't have Star Trek toys. I wasn't a collector from an early age at all. I always loved dressing up. But it wasn't until I got into theater that I really started, and I was a late bloomer when it came to Comic-Cons and conventions. I was a really late bloomer. The first convention I ever went to was an anime convention after I moved to Los Angeles.
Oh, really?
So all this stuff that happened was in the fantasy world of my mind. That was absolutely it. And I got into sci-fi and fantasy through books when I was young. And it was like, you know, A Wrinkle in Time and The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And any book about a dragon, I was all about it. So traveling to those places absolutely happened first through books for me. And in that way, it was a very interior journey for sure. It would all happened inside my brain and inside my imagination. And I loved it. I would retreat there a lot as a kid, for sure. See, I think Star Trek The Next Generation is what really sparked my kind of own beloved relationship with the Star Trek world and the Star Trek franchise. So it was through that show and me watching it regularly that I kind of fell in love with the whole Star Trek universe.
Did you ever read any of the Star Trek novels?
No, I didn't, because by that point, I was kind of in my early and mid adolescence. So all the reading that I would do would kind of be around school and my schoolwork.
Yeah.
And at that point also, I was a teenager. So it was, I'm not going to lie. What I read were, it's a little embarrassing. I read a lot of those fantasy, historical drama romances. That's what I was all about. So
that's right. Reading is reading. Yeah.
That's true. But as a teenager and as a late adolescent, it was all about like dragons and princesses and romances and otherworldly type things. So yeah, that's what my reading went into at that point.
Well, you said that TNG was, I guess, your series. That's the one that you identify with the most. Did you have any interest in any of the original series movies when they started?
You know, being with Vic Mignogna, who you mentioned has been on your show before, and Star Trek Continues, we've been together for quite a long time now, over 10 years. And his love of the original series, he was absolutely horrified that I had never sat down and watched them in succession, all three seasons. So that was kind of a prerequisite very early on in our relationship. Because as soon as I mentioned, no, I'm a Next Gen fan. I love Next Gen. He was like, what? He's like, sit down. He got out the DVDs and we watched all the episodes from beginning to end. I fell in love with the original series. Don't get me wrong. I love it. I love all. I'll be honest with you. I find things to love about every single one of the Star Trek series, and I've seen them all. Oh, I'm so sorry. I totally blanked on what your original question was.
I was asking you about the original series movies. Yeah.
Yeah, the movies. So after we watched all of the series, I obviously went through and rewatched. I'd seen the Star Trek movies, but as you know, when you build up the relationship and the weight of that many episodes of television, 89, right? Mm-hmm. You build up the relationship and you see the development, and then you revisit these movies, having that wealth of kind of relationship and foundational kind of investment with those characters, they take on a whole meaning.
Right.
I feel like it's just completely different, which is why I think, and forgive me for those of your listeners who are fans, the J.J. Abrams Trek just doesn't do it for me in the realm of loving it as a Star Trek franchise. Those three seasons, those 89 episodes of relationship that was built with those characters, it just makes those movies that much more special. So, and of course, I'm not going to be any different than most people. Wrath of Khan is absolutely my favorite. You put it on, I can catch it at any point in the movie and I will sit down and watch it. I don't care what I'm doing or where I am, but I will watch it. It's absolutely my favorite.
Yeah, I think the scene in Wrath of Khan where Spock dies, it doesn't really have any weight for you if you don't know those characters.
Exactly.
If all you know is what you saw in like the motion picture, then you wouldn't. Yeah, you wouldn't be attached to the characters.
And that's why, honestly, when the JJ, I don't even know the names of them, but it was the second one where they reversed the characters and brought that moment back.
Into darkness.
I physically, in the movie theater, vocalized, this is what I saw coming, and I was like, don't you dare. I said it out loud. I was so upset when I saw what they were going to try and do, because there was not the weight of the relationship behind it. It did not, these characters did not have that relationship. They had not earned that moment. They hadn't earned the right to that moment.
Yeah.
I was really upset. I was like fuming in my chair.
Yeah, I argued that when it first came out, because I said, number one, those movies take place during the original series timeline.
Exactly.
And not at the point that Star Trek II was, because Star Trek II took place about 10, 15 years later. And so these characters were basically brothers at that point. When you're looking at them in Into Darkness, they've only known each other for a couple of years. They're not that close, you know.
Yeah, the moments they had in the first movie were where they actually kind of hated each other. right? And then all of a sudden you're bringing this moment around in the second movie. No, no, don't buy it. Don't buy it. So anyway, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to go off on a little bit of a rant there, but don't get me wrong. I think anything that brings people to Star Trek and will get them interested in investigating and looking at previous versions of it is great. I think they're after an entirely different crowd with those things. They were looking for new audience and they were getting them with the action. I totally understand it, but it's just very different. You know, there's a reason I think true Trek fans love Star Trek. It's what it stands for, what it represents, what it's trying to do, and what it's trying to show us we can become. It's not, you know, an action and special effects giant. That's not what's at the core of what Star Trek is about for me. So that's kind of why it just doesn't, it's just not the same. Just not the same.
Have you seen all three of those movies?
Yeah. Yes, I have.
Yeah. I was going to ask you because in my opinion, I agree with everything you said, but in my opinion, the last one, which was Star Trek Beyond, is a little more Star Trek than the other two. Yeah. It feels more Star Trek. It was written by people who have actually seen the show.
Yeah.
The first one I felt was written by Star Wars fans. Right. And
because it was, basically it was. And Simon Pegg was involved, and Simon Pegg is one hell of a class act. You can look up anything that he's written. You can watch him in interviews. He's incredibly intelligent, so bright, so thoughtful. He went into that, the third movie, with absolutely, that's what he was trying to do. He was trying to honor everything about the original series that he loved, which is, and he's a true, honest to God Trekkie. Like, he loves Trek for all the reasons that I think most, you know, years and years investment Trek fans love Trek. So, you know, and you could see that. You could see his love for it and the banter and in the relationships. But more of that was shown to us. So you're absolutely right. Out of the three, by far, it's the best. And I'm sure it was because Simon Pegg was involved.
Well, I think you and I are probably around the same age. So you were in high school about the time that Deep Space Nine came out.
Right.
So, being a big Next Generation fan, how did you feel about a new series coming out that wasn't even going to be on a starship?
You know, I was just excited there was going to be more Star Trek. And
right.
I rewatched Deep Space Nine recently. And as an adult now, I appreciated it so much more. I love Deep Space Nine. I love it. There are some episodes in there that will break your heart. And they were, I mean, those relationships. Number one, I love the fact that Sisko was a single parent. Only time we got to see a captain with a kid. And I don't know if you noticed this, and maybe some of your listeners might know this for sure. I saw this and it just struck me a few episodes in. Whenever he would say goodbye to his son or whenever he would greet him, he kissed him. And that is not something they would write in the script. I bet anything that was something he decided to do on his own. And I don't know. I just found it as being that relationship, him being a father and him having that son and the storylines that came out of that. I mean, Tony Todd's episode where he played the grown up.
Yeah.
Holy crap balls.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Heart out. Oh my gosh. I just did a convention with Tony Todd this last weekend up in Massachusetts. It was a horror convention. We were up at StarCon together, which, you know, was a first for me. Kim Stinger and I were up there. It was a hoot. We had a ball, but Tony Todd was there. And I just had to get in front of him and I became a fangirl. I was like, I just have to tell you all the roles that you did as Worf's brother and everything. All the things that you have done in Star Trek have just been some of my most favorite episodes, and I just love you. I totally fangirled out on him, and he was so sweet about it. But I love Deep Space Nine because I think they were able to go really deep into some serious episodes, man. They dealt with some stuff. They dealt with some deep stuff.
Yeah, and they revolutionized television too because they were the first ones that really started the whole serialized aspect. Every show that's on now is serialized.
Right.
And they were the first ones that did that and that wasn't afraid to not be as episodic as what we had seen
Right,
before.
Very true. Very true. Yeah. So I think I've come to reappreciate it, as I think we all can. You know, I love revisiting things that were such an intrinsic part of our childhood. And, you know, you can't help but see them with different eyes. The way we see the world is different. Thank goodness. Hopefully we've evolved. And so the way we can view these episodes and these characters and their messages has evolved. It's a pretty wonderful thing.
Well, The Next Generation went off the air in 94.
Yeah. Was it 94?
And Yeah, it was 94, and then they started making movies after that. So how do you feel about the next generation film?
I love them. First of all, the very first one that came out, wasn't it First Contact was first, right?
No,
Oh,
Generations
Generations.
came first.
Whoa, was it? Oh my God, I'm ashamed of
Yeah.
myself. Yes. Yeah, so the very, I was living in London. I was studying abroad as a student for college, and they got that movie 6 months later than we got it in. It was actually it was First Contact, the one I'm thinking of, not Generations, the second movie. So they received it. Yeah, I was in college during the second movie. They received it 6 months later. I had to wait 6 months to see that freaking thing, and I going stir crazy. I Londoners thought I was a weirdo. I was there lined up like almost 12 hours before the show started to make sure I could get the first tickets. Yeah, I was a nutball. I was so incredibly excited, but it was a trial. It was a test for me. I had to wait 6 months to be able to see the second one, but I love them. They for me had a lot of the same like you get that special tickle. Seeing your favorite characters in some really funny roles, and
Right, yeah.
I love what was done with them in some of those. Obviously, they weren't all hits. That's okay. They don't all have to be, Smashbox kind of sensations. But for the most part, I loved them. I think it's great.
Yeah, we can't. I mean, fans can't expect every single movie to come out. I mean, because not every episode is
Right.
great,
And
you
it
know.
totally depends on the funding and who they're letting direct and who's in charge of the writing at that point for whatever whatever's going on at the studio at that time. So it's changing hands a lot, unfortunately. But I think for them, I mean, I just get a kick out of them again because you have that deep relationship and that kind of the weight of those relationships over several years. So it's just so fun to see them on the big screen.
What about some of the other series? What about Voyager?
I know people have very mixed feelings about Voyager.
Yeah.
I love Kate Mulgrew. Kate
Oh, yeah.
Mulgrew is a freaking, excuse my language, badass lady. She is freaking smart. She is so incredibly talented. I read her biography. It's her autobiography. It's amazing. I love her, and I've gotten a much greater appreciation of her. And I was actually at Space City Comic Con a couple years ago. They were having their 25th anniversary reunion, and it was the whole cast, and I got to moderate their panel. And I usually do not have a problem speaking at all. In fact, I usually speak too much. Obviously, the people listening to you can testify to that right now.
No, not at all.
I was a mess. I was a mess. I was so nervous. There's a video of it, and you can see as I'm introducing them, my freaking hands are shaking. I was so incredibly nervous. Again, I had to hide the fact that I was a total fangirl, but I am a total fangirl. And especially with Kate Mulgrew, I'm sitting next to her on stage, just like losing my mind. I have this smile plastered on my face, and my eyes look like there's, I'm a doe in headlights. I'm like just losing my mind because I'm just such an admirer of her. So yes, I watched Voyager. I thought there was some good stuff going on in there. Again, not all winners. It's certainly not my favorite of the series for sure. Neither is Enterprise, not my favorites. But Kate Mulgrew is amazing. There were some really beautiful stories, and some of my favorite stories in Next Gen, like Offspring, the episode Offspring, where Data basically has a child. Lol, do you remember that
Right.
one?
Yeah.
Okay,
Yes.
lost my mind in that. Totally cried. In the same respect, when Seven of Nine basically has that Borg child. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Oh my
Yes.
gosh. That was a beautiful episode. That was amazing. So it had its really beautiful moments, And Kate Mulgrew is awesome. That's all I'm just.
Yeah. Oh, she is. Yeah.
Yes.
I was gonna add, this question just kind of came to me. I wanted to ask, what is it like as far as being somebody that really grew up as a fan of these series to go to all these conventions and you're actually meeting all these people that you saw?
Know. Isn't it crazy?
Because you're like, I mean, for Star Trek fan, there's a lot of Star Trek fans who know who you are because we watch Star Trek Continues, but you're actually
Exactly. And
appearing
that's
on
me.
panels, you're appearing in
Yeah.
panels and stuff with people that you watched growing up. What is that like?
It is nutball, Sean. It is absolutely positively nutball. I deserve an Oscar for the way that I act like a normal human being, especially the first time I meet these folks. Because once you get to know people, obviously, you know this, anyone else who's met those folks, they're just people. It's not like, you know, and it's really funny to find out that your favorite stars are not even Trek fans themselves, which I think is absolutely hilarious. And it just cracks me up. But it is crazy to me. It's absolutely crazy. I cannot tell you what a dream Star Trek Continues has been. It has been, it's just been such an absolute gift. Like, I'm going to get just so emotional about it. It is to have so many people who love Star Trek for so many different reasons, all these different ages of folks that are involved in our production, different skill levels. We've got production professionals and then folks who, when they started out with us, just wanted to help out and didn't know anything about production. And now, quite frankly, after as many episodes as we've done, our crew runs better than most professional crews. I am willing to put money on that. We are such a well-oiled machine now. Yeah. Our last shoot, we are clicking. We are just clicking so well. And it is like a family. It is not like a family. It is a family. It is a family. They are my second family, and I love them so much. So to be a part of something so special that, number one, people love, the fact that so many people write me and write the show saying how much they love Star Trek Continues and how much individual episodes have meant to them, can see what we're trying to do, which is honor this franchise to the best of our ability, and then to be hanging out with other stars.
Yeah.
And like riding the same planes, going to the same conventions. It is insane to me to have their cell phone numbers on my phone and get texts from them. It's like, it's insane. It's just insane to me. I can't, it's just nothing but gift. It's just nothing but gift. All of it has been gift. That's what I'm saying.
When I interviewed Vic, like I said, I think it was back in December. And, you know, he could just kind of casually say, oh, yeah, I was over at Michael Dorn's house. I was like, you were what?
Yeah. Yeah, we hang out with Michael. Awesome. Is a sweetheart. By the way, do you know that Michael Dorn is a vegan, which I just think is the coolest thing on the planet, that Worf is a vegan. I think that tickles me to no end. It just tickles me. But yes, he's a sweetheart. Marina is amazing. Marina is, if the zombie apocalypse comes around, I am going to Marina's house, because that woman will take out anyone in her way. She is the strongest, brashest. She speaks what's on her mind. She makes me laugh every second that I'm around her. She's hysterical. She's amazing. So yeah, it's crazy to me, Sean. It's crazy.
I've seen her take down some. I've seen her take down some Twitter trolls a couple of times.
She's not messing around. I would not mess with Marina. No way, shape, or form. I do not ever want to be on her bad side.
So you play Dr. McKenna on Star Trek Continues, and she's the ship's counselor.
Correct.
The original series didn't have a counselor, but TNG did. So how did you guys get the idea to kind of show the origin of that role?
Right. Well, it was kind of all the brainchild of Vic, actually. We were sitting there trying to talk about the elements of what we wanted to bring into the fourth and fifth season of TOS. We saw the direction Gene was going when you look just, isn't it, what is it, 86 years in the future, 87 years in the future that TNG takes place after TOS? You saw where he wanted things to go in the universe. You see these new evolutions of both technology and characters, and also kind of the type of characters he had in his in the focus of most of his episodes. So we know where he wanted to evolve, and we're trying to think of the ways that we can not only finish out the 5-year mission, but give you little glimpses of what's leading into the next amalgamation of Next Gen in Gene Roddenberry's vision, right? We wanted to not only finish the 5-year mission, but also tie it beautifully and neatly to what was to come. So you see that in our very first episode. You see the beginnings of the holodeck technology. You see the beginnings of our phasers actually shifting, style of phasers shifting more, like the new phasers that are coming in are kind of leading us toward what's coming in the future of Star Trek. And when we were thinking about characters, Vic was like, you know, in 86 years, there's counselors on every single flipping ship. When did that even start? When did that start? You know, we were discussing how, especially TOS is a product of its time, for sure. You see it in the storylines. You see it in the ethical and moral dilemmas that the plot faced and the characters faced on that show. It was absolutely a product of its time, and we're trying to revive this that show, but we can't help but be a product of our time. So of course, being a female, I was saying, you know what? I would love to see more females. I would love to see more women in command positions, in leadership positions, playing an equal role on this show. We got it down in the diversity department, and Uhura is positively amazing. By the way, Nichelle Nichols is a goddess. I just want to put that out there. Everyone knows it.
Yeah.
There she is. She's literally a goddess walking on this earth. So anyway,
right.
We have amazing Nichelle Nichols, and we have Kim reprising her role. But you know, I'm a product of my time, and that was my voice that I put in there. I would really like to see more women on that bridge. We know that that's coming soon, in just less than, you know, in a couple generations time, or in a generation's time. And he said, well, there had to have been a pilot for the counselor program sometime. Had to have been. They had to try it out and at least release it and see what it did. Why don't you be that? And I was like, are you kidding me? I literally lost my shit in the class. I literally went wacko. It was an incredible idea. And of course I was all for it. I think it's amazing. So that's kind of where it came from. It's when we were looking at how to honor and finish out that 5-year mission, and also how to do it while looking ahead to what we know Gene Roddenberry wanted to happen in the next fruition of the Star Trek franchise.
What does the future hold for Star Trek Continues? How many episodes have you guys got left?
There are 8 released. We'll be releasing 9, 10, and 11 over the rest of this year. And that is it. That is it. That is all that we will be doing. As you know, there are most fan productions are having to come to a close because of litigation that was happening with another production. So,
right.
We had finished our fundraising before that litigation had happened, and so we, you know, of course, want to honor CBS and had let them know we're not fundraising anymore. We're finishing out what we have, and that will be it. So that's our plan. We will be done.
So there's not like a Star Trek Continues 2 looming in that. I see people. I'm on a Facebook group of Star Trek Continues, and I think one of the members of your crew kind of heads that up. But people are on there all the time saying, "Why is it ending? It's a great show." And I kind of go on there and I tell them, you know, I interviewed Vic, and he said that it was kind of, you know, he kind of planned out from the beginning to only have a certain number of episodes because you were going to do season 4 and season 5. Of course, I think it would be fun to see you guys do some kind of a project that takes place in the movie timeline. I think see something like that.
That would be fun. Yeah. Yes, his plan was from the beginning to do. Obviously, this is like, I would say second job, but or third job for many of us, but that would indicate that we were being paid for it, and we're not.
Yeah.
So yeah. We are. This is like a full-time third job with no pay that we are all trying to coordinate and trying to accomplish, putting out an hour-long movie, basically, 3 times a year, which is for a very small band of dedicated volunteers. It's a huge undertaking, and I really don't know if people understand that until they come down to a working set with that many moving parts and that many people involved and see what it requires both in planning and in execution and in post-production to actually make just one episode happen. It's a huge, huge amount of work with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of man hours. And those are all donated man hours and unpaid man hours. So it's a huge undertaking. So he had never planned for it to go. Obviously, if we were, you know, a fully funded, fully staffed production company that could do that as our job and had hundreds of people working on it the way most places do that do this kind of thing, that would be a whole other story. But we don't.
Right.
And we never have. So it would be impossible. We would kill ourselves trying to do that forever. It just is impossible. So he was planning on doing 13 episodes from the beginning. We're having to bring that to a close sooner than we wanted to, obviously. So there wasn't as, you know, there were further character development things we had wanted to do and other storylines we had wanted to bring to a close that we will not be able to do. But given the time we had allotted, I cannot wait for people to see these last 3 episodes. They are absolutely freaking incredible. They are our best. they are absolutely our best. I'm just, by the time we got going on these, like, as I said, we've been doing this now for over 3 years, 4 years. We are just cooking. Like, our production is clipping along the way that, you know, I was on a series before. My sketch group was turned into a sitcom that we wrote and produced and directed for the VH1 network. We were the very first and only original scripted comedy. So I know what it's like to be on a set, and it takes a little while for the rhythm of a production to get going.
Right.
The relationships to kind of forge, you kind of get to know each other and really feel, it's just like a well-oiled machine. It just takes a little bit to get cooking. And we are just, with 8, 9, 10, and 11, we are just cooking. We were just smoking. And you will see that in not only the stories and the executions and the performances. It's just, they're going to be amazing. And people will freak out. I cannot wait for them to see them. I cannot wait. And I'm the worst with secrets. I am so bad, Sean. I want to leak everything all the time to everyone. It's horrible. I am no good at that whatsoever. But yeah, so that's kind of how it's going to be ending up. But people will be so excited. We are doing it. We're bringing an end to the 5-year mission. It will all make sense. And I just can't wait. I can't wait for people to see it. Cannot wait.
Well, it looks, I mean, the show looks beautiful. I mean, you guys have done a really good job of making it feel like you're watching additional episodes of the show. I mean, you weren't the first fan production, but you've definitely been the best in my opinion.
Thank you, Sean. I agree with you. I'm just 100% comfortable in agreeing with you. I really do think we do it pretty dang well. Yeah.
Are you looking forward to Star Trek Discovery?
I am. You do know that our last episode guest star, Rekha Sharma, in episode 8, Still Treads the Shadow, is one of the character leads on Discovery.
I did not realize
yes,
that.
Yes, that's darling cool. Rekha, who I'm going to see tomorrow, actually, at a pool party. Rekha is amazing. She was obviously from Battlestar Galactica, and she is going to be one of the series regulars on Discovery. So it's pretty flippin' exciting for us. I'm excited for her. I'm excited for any new Star Trek. Again, I know we are like the hardest population to please. I know it. I know Star Trek fans. They are. And no matter how good something is, there will always be people who will not like it. And it's impossible to make something that everybody likes and everybody's excited right. about. But I'm not going to draw any conclusions until we start seeing it. And, you know, everyone's doing a different, the people producing Star Trek today have different ideas in mind. They just have a different kind of take on it. And ours is very specific, and theirs is going to be very specific. We are trying to, and I think we're doing it very successfully with Star Trek Continues, to revitalize and pay homage to the original series and to finish it out, give it the finish and the end that it never received. And that was the only Star Trek we never got more of. You know, we've had lots of new Star Treks and lots of new series, but the original is the only one we've never had a real finish to. So that was our focus, yeah. And Star Trek Discovery will be something completely different. So we'll see what that's going to be about when it starts being released. But I am definitely excited, and I will definitely watch it.
As a Star Trek fan, we're all constantly exposed to tidbits of philosophy, life lessons, things of that nature. So what do you feel that Star Trek did for you that made your life better?
Oh my gosh, that is a big question, Sean. That is a huge question. Okay, I'll sum it up in one word and then I'll expand on what I mean by it.
Okay.
Hope. Hope, hope, hope.
Right.
This is the future that I want to be a part of. Star Trek is the only sci-fi show that you not only shows us technology that is now possible and possibly in the future it might be a reality, but it shows a vision of humanity that does right by the world. We do right by ourselves and we do right by the universe. And we go out into that universe with the intention of making it better and of helping. And that to me, it's hope, 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 hope. It has absolutely, and like I said, when I went back and watched Next Generation and watching the things that they struggled with and their view on everything, it absolutely fundamentally shaped my character. It shaped how I look at the world. It shaped how I look at humanity. It shaped how I looked at the role of technology and science within that, and how incredibly integral it is to our progress. It absolutely helped define who I am. And at the core of it is the positive view of what we can be, the kind of future we can actually create. And it's not a dystopic future. It's not black. We're not all desperately trying to survive, and we're not all victims or pirates or, you know, it's not this bleak, scary future. It is one full of hope. And that is unique to Star Trek. I think it's beautiful, and it's absolutely shaped how I look at the world and how I look at us.
Well said. Where can people find you?
Oh, well, I am a big old dork, and I love to talk to people online, like, a lot. And people think that I'm weird because I respond to everybody and talk to everybody on there. But I do. I love it. I'm a big old geek just like everybody else. So I'm on Facebook at Michelle Specht, and Michelle with one L, Specht. I'm on Twitter at Michelle Specht. I'm on Instagram at Michelle Specht. I've got a website, michellespecht.com. Just plop in my name and you're going to find me. I love to hear people's stories. I love to hear why Star Trek is important to them. I love to geek out with them. And that's why I really love going to conventions, because I am just as excited to be there as most people are. And we all nerd out together. So I hope to be able to meet as many people as possible. And like I said, this Star Trek Continues has just been an absolute gift. And it's literally just been, I get really emotional when I think about it. But it's true. Star Trek has been like such a huge part of the positive parts of my life. And now with this show, it's just gone tenfold. So I'm just so incredibly grateful. I'm grateful people like what we're doing. I'm grateful people will look past my absolute weirdness and kookiness when they meet me. And just, that's one thing I love about Star Trek fans. Like, it's like an instant family when you go, like, we go to Star Trek Las Vegas every year, and I don't even have to know your name. We can meet, and I already know that I love you. Like, I already know it. I already know it. I already know we've got something integral in common with each other. And I'm so grateful. So grateful for all of it. And hopefully I connect with some of the people listening to this today as well.
Well, I appreciate you being here.
Oh, I appreciate you asking, Sean. Thank you.
The Prime Direction is part of the Cosmic Potato Podcast Network. It can be found on my website at cosmicpotato.com, and it's also available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Podcast Addict on the Android Store. Be sure to subscribe to the show so that you'll know when new episodes are available, and leave a rating and a review so that I can help more people find the show. If you would like to be on the podcast and share with me and my audience the story of your Star Trek fandom, just send me an email at mail@cosmicpotato.com, and I'll get in touch with you as soon as possible. Thank you for listening to the show and being a part of the Prime Direction.